Hello, welcome to the latest.
Without any booze.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do it without booze.
Well, I'm just gonna get angry and go to bed.
Okay, it'll be a short podcast then.
Alright.
Welcome to the latest Dumbarton Days podcast. I'm Bart and this is Tim.
Hello.
Hello, Tim. We've just been next door to the Polish people, mainly Polish people. One Swede, I think actually an English person I've got living there. And we've had a lovely dinner. Tim missed out on because he's been to a health spa, Bannatyne's health spa. And but we're back now. We brought a couple of them back briefly, and I think we're just forging Dumbarton relations like wildfire.
Of course, we'll be spreading, won't we? With me leaving the main house to move into a sort of annexed community.
It's news to listeners, Tim. Maybe you'd like to tell us more about that.
I'll be moving out of the main house, which I've been in for just over 3 years now. So a lot of listeners will probably be, and they'll probably send shockwaves through certain communities.
I'd have thought so.
But I'll be moving not far away, don't worry.
Won't be far.
No end to this. No end to this. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah.
I'll just be across the way. I'll literally be a brick wall away.
And with any luck, you'll be able to hear me. We'll sing to each other perhaps sometimes.
Probably
through the wall.
And maybe, I mean, what I dream of is, in fact, that I will finally realise my dream of buying a USB mic for my computer, and maybe Bart will come around to my flat and we'll do some podcasts there as well. So what we'll do is a sort of home and away sort of style thing, where 1 week someone's at home, the other week they're away, but we carry on doing the podcast, but it'll be slightly on different territory, which will probably give a slightly different feel. At the moment it's always home, which would be nice to have a sort of, like, this week you're my guest in my podcast, and next week, you know, I'll be your guest in your podcast. That might give a different feel for the listeners. I think that's something that we just add an extra bit of spice to it.
Hope so. I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, will be sad that you're moving out of the main house. I think we can all agree it's the main house where things happen and will continue to happen. But I see it only as a good thing. We'll be getting a new Dumbarton, and with any luck, he or she will be included in the podcast. And it can only spice.
I don't know. We've never really got anyone else here to be in the podcast.
But there is the opportunity. I mean, Tara hopefully will be in it. Tara, a very beautiful half Chinese girl we live with, she's never. Well, she's at home, but never in the evenings.
I'll be honest. I'll interject here. I'll say I'm not entirely sure that anyone else should be in the podcast, regardless of who lives here, just because, you know, the listeners. I mean, and I know there are listeners out there, and I thank you for listening. And hello, especially to that guy from Harlow. I've forgotten his name.
Omid,
I forgot your name. We had a lovely chat with at the art gallery for several hours. In fact, we had a lovely chat, didn't we, Omid? I know you're a listener, and but people like him, I think I speak for people like him when I say, you know, they're listening for us. They're probably. I mean, it's nice to have the occasional guest, as we did with the one where Lee was in it.
And the two with Everin would actually only got better when she left the room.
Ever was very much a sort of guest star for a few minutes.
Yeah.
I think that the people do listening to hear what we've got to say. And, you know, as much as I may be moving a few feet away, across the way, I mean, I hopefully the listeners won't, if anything, they'll gain more from the experience that I have from a slightly different way of life across the way. But I don't think we'll be bringing too many people in, hopefully, because that will change. It would be our podcast, something else.
Blah,
I think
blah,
we're going to do
blah,
something
blah,
else.
Blah.
We'll do something else.
Uh-huh. So what do you think about The X Factor?
Well, it's a brilliant show.
Just try and guide you in a direction here. I mean,
The X Factor
it's good to know what we're going to be doing. But I mean, let's get into the meat of the podcast.
Yeah, The X Factor is a great show for the masses. It's made for the common man, and I like to think of myself as still being in touch with the common man. In fact, whilst I was on my spa weekend, this weekend at a Bannatyne spa in Battle near Hastings, I do recommend it to anyone who fancies just getting away from London. It's
It's called within, Battle, named after the war?
Named after the Battle of Hastings. Well, the battle in fact, of Hastings. Today there was a reenactment.
Definitive
of
battle.
Hastings.
Definitive battle.
The problem was they were asking for £10 to go and watch the reenactment, and both myself and Angela thought that might be. We thought that was an excessive charge.
I mean, couldn't you just watch it from
a
field?
No, you couldn't because it was behind a massive wall.
Hmm.
A big, what, like an olden days Norman,
specially constructed wall, was it?
No, it was a. It was inside. I don't know anyone who's been to battle.
Like a laser quest or something.
There's like an abbey, which is surrounded by a massive stone wall, which was built in Norman times, which is about 20 feet tall, maybe more. There's no way you're looking over that. I mean, you probably could have heard it.
But what if they just reenacted the Battle of Hastings and the laser quest?
Well, it'd be a different story. Probably, there'd certainly be no arrows in the eye.
No, I mean, you don't actually die in Laser Quest, so they'd have to execute people on demand, ad hoc, if you will.
You would definitely, because obviously the definitive moment of the Battle of Hastings involved an arrow, and no arrows, as far as I know.
Well, as far as the tapestry tells us.
As far as I that yes, the bio, B-O, bio.
Yeah, by you.
I've seen that, actually. It's a lovely piece.
It's in France, isn't it?
It's in a place called Bayeux, in fact, amazingly.
Still there.
Yes, it is. It's all
these years.
I'll tell you what, listeners, if you are listening, and I know this isn't really funny, I know you're listening for some comedy and whatever, it's just a bit of lovely history.
I do think we should have some points of interest.
If you're going to go to northern France, to Normandy, pop into Bio, go and look at the tapestry. It's classic. It really is a lovely piece. It's about £3 or £4 to see it. I don't know, maybe with the exchange rate at the moment, it might be 5 or 6. Go and look at that, but then do go and see the Normandy beaches where our boys landed in D-Day in 1944. They all surround it.
They still have those big cross things in it.
Ooh, in what?
You know, the big in the beaches, you know, the big cross things.
Cross, what, angry?
No. The big, big metal crosses to, I don't know what they were for, I guess.
No, not much of that, just
what
beaches.
What were they for? Just, like, some kind of...
Are we talking about... The film,
not the crosses, you know, the things that the X shaped metal things that everyone had to run around. They didn't seem to have much purpose.
Yeah, I don't think there wasn't much of that when I went
there. What were they?
A few years ago.
Were they?
I don't know. Maybe they were to sort of mark the spot that they're meant to run at.
There. It's like the Germans had put them there.
Yeah, maybe they were just to confuse the Allies.
Jews, were you going to say?
Well, no, the Jews weren't involved. I mean,
no.
There were some Jews fighting on the Allied side, and we thank them for their help.
Very grateful.
But those crosses were probably put there, the Germans, who really didn't play by the rules. They probably put them there to sort of confuse us, because we came running off our boats on D-Day. Oh, we're going to go and, you know, get the Germans, and then you'd see a massive great metal cross in the sand. What are you meant to think?
You think, whoa, and as soon as you thought, whoa.
Well, you think, whoa,
thought,
and the next thing you know, you've got
head
a shell in your head.
Head's
or,
blown off. Take your helmet off,
yes,
think, oh, I was lucky, then get a bullet in your head.
That's the last thing you need.
Steven Spielberg captures that amazingly in the film Saving Private Ryan, of course.
Which is a modern classic.
Certainly is.
But when you do go to those beaches, the blood really does run deep. There's something funny about them. I mean, I'm not one of those people who, I mean, I don't really like the war that much, like it now.
Not a lot of people do.
But I don't like war commemorations. I think we should probably just draw a line under it and just say, that was bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, cheers for your help. Well done, everyone.
I think that's what they're saying. They're saying cheers for your help towards the families of people
it's getting to the stage, I think, where it's just sort of raking up old graves.
There aren't many of them left. There aren't really many of them left.
Yeah, and I just think that it really is an excuse for jingoism and sort of nationalism, and it sort of just makes people hate Germany. And Germany now, modern Germany, is a great place, and you know, a lot of good people. And I think it's best just to say, let's just forget about
that.
Let's stop having all these things with flags.
I think the fact that I don't really care to watch the remembrance, say, remembrances or whatever. Maybe means that I don't care so much for hatred against Germany either. Maybe that's why I don't watch them.
I think you're a very sensible and forward-thinking person.
Thank you very much.
But I do agree with your opinion in the sense that I think that this whole Remembrance Day thing, as much as I'll be the first man to say thank you to those people who fought for our freedom, and I think they were very brave and they did a very good job.
They did something they had to do, I mean, against their will in a lot of cases.
Exactly. It wasn't as simple as we make it. And I think Remembrance Day simplifies it, and says that these were people who all wanted to be there and were fighting something they believed in. Most of them probably weren't. They were just people who were forced to do something they didn't understand. And secondly, this is something that happened 60-odd years ago. Most of the people are dead. A lot of the people who remember it don't want to remember it. And why do we have to keep sort of bringing it up and sort of reminding everyone that there was this horrible time in European history? In fact, we now live in the best times Europe's ever known, in the sense we're all friends. There's 27 countries that just wander around with passports, enjoying it. I mean, we're only next door, weren't we, with the Polish door. Some lovely Polish people next door. Not that, or obviously Poland, in fact, started the war by being Poland. It wasn't their fault. We signed the pact with them. No one asked them to, you know, it wasn't their fault they weren't even born.
Of course, the Dumbarton mindset is that of inclusion. And I think I think the remembrance celebrations, as you were saying, actually it affords
for dividing.
Dividing.
I think Remembrance Day is divisive. I think that all of those things should just be sort of, we should just draw a line under it and maybe have one big one. You know, maybe next year or something, you know, this November, it'd be soon.
Maybe we could wait till like 2018.
Well, that's too long. I think it's the 11th of November this year. That's the one, you know, it's the remembrance day, the 11th of November.
Why would that be the last one?
Well, just because it's the next one.
What?
The next remembrance day.
Because you're bored of them now.
Well, I think that we should have done this years ago, but let's just use the next one, because I don't want to deprive people of the one.
It's a nice idea. It's a nice arrangement.
I don't want them to
It's a nice idea, but the thing is, people want there to be a reason for it to be the last one of something.
Yeah.
Like, everyone wants 40-year, 20-year anniversaries and stuff like that.
Because I give an impassioned speech and just say, look, it's not right anymore.
It'd have to be some speech.
Well, you know, I think I could do it if necessary.
Well, let's get you up to the cenotaph. Let's take Dumbarton Day to the cenotaph.
We'll get a camera up there. I'll go on the news.
Do we have any podcast materials that we can do? I mean, that one at what was it called? Truck Fest. That didn't work out. I'm sorry, you won't get to hear any of the Nick Cope interviews.
Massive news about the Cope brothers. I mean, Nick Cope's got some amazing children's songs, which I'm now managing him and Mark Cope in a way, but in a different way. And if you are interested in it, and if you've got children or you're a teacher and you're interested in hearing some great children's songs, do log on to all the W's, nickcope.co.uk.
A website that you wouldn't necessarily go to if you're a teacher.
It was there, would you?
I mean, maybe you should have called it children's songs.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to talk to him about the branding issues. I'm going to talk to him about that.
Because Nick Cope means nothing to most people.
Well, unless you're a massive fan of the Candy Skins.
I've never been to it, and I'm a semi fan.
I was at Heather's birthday on Friday, and as a little treat for any issues, Candy Skins fan, I phoned Nick Cope up. I said, "All right, Nick, how are you doing?" I said, "It's Candy Skins fan's birthday, 30th, in fact, it's a 30th birthday. Do you mind just sending her a birthday greeting?" I passed the phone over, so she couldn't believe it. Of course, Nick Cope, the lead singer and songwriter of Candy Skins. No, I've not been talking with him much lately. I'm now in with Nick.
Oh. In many ways, that's who you wanted to get to, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's the John Lennon of the 90s.
Mark Cope, a lovely man, though.
No, I'm not saying
anything.
No, I
don't
want
to do him down.
I'm not doing down Mark. I'm just saying Nick was the man who wrote the songs. And, you know, he's probably the one that people would recognise best as the singer and songwriter.
And what did Heather say when she got the phone?
She looked very embarrassed, in fact. She was almost blushing. He obviously has asked her afterwards what he said, and he said, you know, happy birthday. Nice to know you're a fan online. She said it reminds me of the old days and stuff.
Rather than
a little tete-a-tete.
Never talk to me again.
Afterwards, I must admit, I thought she was a little... ingracious, is that the right word?
Yeah, in
the sense that I said, "Oh, that was fun," and she was like, "Oh, yeah, whatever."
Does Heather know who the Candy Skins are?
Yeah, she's
I'd
a massive
she's
fan.
A, I'd
she's
assume she's a fan.
She comes from Oxford.
Yeah,
she's a massive fan.
Didn't care.
Well, no, she was really excited, but I saw her because I was standing there. She was on the phone. She looked really excited, and then afterwards, she was just like, "Oh, yeah, whatever." And I thought, well, that's a bit off, because you obviously enjoyed that, but then you won't say to
maybe
me,
she's
thank
pretending
you.
That maybe she's pretending that she doesn't care.
Well, I just thought it'd be nice to just say, well, that's bit, you know, why not just
touched,
say,
touched,
why not just
I was
say,
touched.
Well, I don't expect her to cry.
No, tell me be touched. If she seemed touched, then say you're touched.
Yeah. Or just say, you know, that was a nice thing to do. You didn't have to do that. Which I didn't, frankly. And afterwards, to be honest with you, I wish I hadn't bothered. That's the X Factor covered. In a sort of roundabout way.
God, we brought it all full circle.
That was the X Factor, sort of somehow ended
imagine
up on
Nick Cope on the X Factor now, he'd win it hands down.
Well, that's the thing, that's what I don't understand. Is why are people like them not on the telly and not these idiots that... I mean, listeners, you probably don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about the Candy Skins, and if you don't know who they are, do look them up. You can get their songs on iTunes. They've got a MySpace page, I think. You'll hear some of their hits. Go and listen to them, and then listen to Alexandra Burke and whoever else.
Et al.
Yeah, and then whoever else is now on the X Factor. And you make your own mind up. Vote with your fingers, and not by dialing 0901, whatever it is, to vote for those people. Buy the iTunes. Buy some songs from the Candy Skins.
Pop Monkeys. I want to vote for the Pop Monkeys.
Give them 20p.
Because that's what they are, the Pop Monkeys. I'm not being racist.
No, it's not. They're not.
No.
Okay, right. No, it's not.
No, they're just people.
It's not then.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to be racist. You got to cover yourself
difficult times. Well, you have to be careful because, you know, if
even celebrities, as you know, have been caught out recently.
Jeff at work.
So Anton DeBeck, of course.
Jeff at work. Strictly Come Dancing. He came over the other day, and I'm not going to say where I work or who Jeff is. We won't mention names. No. But a man called
he's very good at what he does, though. I hear.
He said there's a new woman over on the desk. Let's just say the desk, whatever that might be. and he said her name is X. I'm not even going to say her name because that would get me into all sorts of complications. And I said, "Oh, who's that?" He said, "Oh, she only started today. She's the coloured woman."
Jeff said that.
Yeah, but the thing is, the way he said it, he didn't mean it in a bad way. He's just old.
That's what I'm saying. It's tough. I said to Jeff, I don't think you can say that anymore.
I didn't want to make an issue of it. I said, just between me and you, later on, took him aside and just said, I don't think you can't call black people the coloureds anymore. He said I didn't know that, and he was very. He was upset that he may have offended someone.
I
think you have to just say black people.
I've got to be honest, I said coloured a few years ago in naivety as well, and I was pulled up on it.
I've never really understood that one because it seems quite a nice phrase.
Yeah.
The coloured, because it's coloured seems sort of nice.
It's the same thing.
Friendly, coloured.
A lot of these words, it's just got a bad connotation because that's what they were called during apartheid, that sort of thing.
But. You know, it's just like nice thing.
Anywhere that had racial divisions.
I mean, when I was a kid, we used to have black and white TV, and the word colour was like
colouring in.
Well, you know, you think of colour TV, and you think, well, that's the best thing in the world. So yeah. I mean, sort of in a way,
colouring in is one of the best things a child can do.
Colouring.
Why don't people colour in anymore? I know I haven't coloured in for fucking 15, 20 years.
iPods, aren't they?
Yeah, probably. But I mean, the joy of trying to stay in the lines. It was great, and you can colour those things in any colour you want.
I saw one of the best episodes of Airline the other day, and you would have loved this.
What was it about?
You know Kevin Reardon, the dispatcher from Liverpool?
Don't know if I do.
Okay, well, he's this rather simple man.
Not the lanky guy, glasses.
No, he's got like a sort of fringe, you'd know him if you saw him.
I know the name.
Anyway, this is the most bizarre section of Airline I've ever seen. For those who've listeners who don't know what Airline is, it's an observational documentary based around EasyJet. It's kind of twin-centred at Luton and Liverpool. This particular incident took place in Liverpool. But Kevin Reardon was called in by his boss, who bought a map of Luton of Liverpool Airport, which was in black and white. It was possibly AO. It was very large.
What's AO?
AO.
Is bigger than A1?
Bigger than A1, yeah. It's the next one up. Double the size of A1. It was huge. And he said, "I want you to colour this in, Kevin." And then Kevin just sat down with some
felt tip
pens and started colouring it in. And then his boss was standing over and going, "Don't go outside the lines." And he does it for about 5 minutes. This is in a TV show, and they're meant to be serious people at work. And then Kevin goes over the line. The bloke shouts at him. Kevin starts flicking his felt tip pens and ink's just going everywhere, and then his boss picks up a felt tip and they both just start flicking it, and it ends up looking like a sort of David Hockney Anthony
Trollope novel.
It looks like a
novelist, I don't think.
It starts looking like the Bell Glass by
Nostradamus
Piaf and Nostradamus on drums, and you just think, what the hell are you people doing? This isn't TV, and then it just cuts back to someone who's late for their flight, and I just thought, this is very strange.
I don't mind saying I zoned out during part of that, but what's the picture of?
It was just an airport. It was the airport plan, and he wanted him to colour the grass in green.
Was it colour by numbers?
No. Just can you colour that bit in, the grass in green?
What kind of felt tips are you using? I hate to bore the
listenership.
Sort of Stabilo
highlighter pens.
So a flat chisel point Stabilo.
A chisel point Stabilo.
Four or five millimeters.
Yeah, sort of normal.
On an A0, it would get boring. It would get boring.
And he said, I don't think there's gonna be enough green in this pen, which I thought was a good point.
Very good. I thought he said it was simple. That's a very good, astute observation.
It is, actually. Yeah.
There's not enough green in this pen. Good name for an album.
Not as good as Pint of Piss and a Skoda, which is what I want to call my next album.
Bit of a Chaz and Dave style one.
Poor Pint of Piss.
Pint of Piss and a Skoda.
Wait a second, that takes us on to our next topic, which is what the hell's going on there?
Well, I've heard a lot of things about Chaz and Dave.
Chaz Hodges.
As I'm sure we all have.
I don't know if this is breaking news to you, but you know, for some people it might be. Chaz Hodges and Dave Peacock, better known as Chaz and Dave, have broken up after nearly 40 years of making music together.
The thing I want to know is, do they live together?
They sleep in the same bed.
I don't believe it.
Nadia and Big Ears.
Do they think? No, they've got their own houses.
They don't.
Big Ears has his own house.
Yeah, but they still choose to sleep together.
No, they don't.
They choose to.
Nadia and Big Ears do not sleep together.
Any Blight made it so. Right, it's not my
child choice. Abuser. In advice.
Was she? No, yeah. She's just a racist.
No, child abuser. She abused her children.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's good.
Gave them what they had coming.
She hated black people.
According to her.
She hated coloureds.
Yeah, which is why she invented the, not invented, but something that was a big, a large...
A gollywog.
Don't want to say gollywog.
Why not?
Well, because
you can say it in reference to Enid Blyton.
Gollywog.
The world's gone crazy.
Gollywog.
I can say Gollywog, I can say Enid Blyton.
Can we say Robertson's anymore?
No. You are a fucking racist.
I'll bleep that out.
Bleep out.
I'll tell you what, I'd bleep it out if I can bother anymore.
Bleep out Robertson.
It doesn't really matter. When we first started this podcast, we were bleeping out everything and its wife.
It was
Allah,
quite funny, though, wasn't
all
it?
Those sort of things.
Allah. Forget it.
Don't matter anymore. Kill me, I don't care.
I tell you what, I've got a few fags downstairs. I know where they are as well.
Get them, I'll talk about X and oranges.
I'll just leave you with X-Men for about 10 seconds. I will stop it.
I was actually thinking earlier about X-Men Origins, Wolverine and his friend Brother Sabretooth, played by Liev Schreiber in that film, they actually seem to win, be the winning factor in all of the major wars, because I think they're ageless or something, they age very, very slowly. And the opening credit sequence of X-Men Origins Wolverine was just those two fighting back-to-back and just basically fucking shit up. You wouldn't believe it, because they were completely, almost completely invulnerable. They healed very quickly. It didn't really matter. And they're very, very good fighters as well, with their mutant powers. And I just wonder exactly, you know, the filmmakers did gloss over it to some extent, because if those two really were as good fighters as they seem to be, they would have won. They would be like the army's secret weapon. And I think they were portrayed as that, but I mean, they wouldn't have just been like a little secret weapon for like a little battle. They could have won every battle just easily, just throwing grenades into pillboxes.
I'm back.
And
Ferrero Rocher.
Do watch that and see what you think. Try on your fags.
Yeah, and Ferrero Rocher.
That's excellent. I hate Ferrero Rocher, but I will have one.
Well, I mean, that's the best ad campaign of the 80s, throughout the 90s.
Tastes like Nutty Dumps to me. I mean,
look
like
if you've ever had a Ferrero Rocher and you've got an opinion, do ring in.
Well, fucking tweeted, because I don't know if you've seen, I've been tweeting a lot. You told me.
I stopped doing it.
Maybe you're right. You told me that the more you tweet, the more you follow. I've been tweeting every couple of days at least.
Hook it up to your mobile phone, you do it from work.
What have I got to say at work?
I don't know, am I going to wank?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
Thing is, at work, I can't really do it. I really feel I have to do it here, because here I'm in Dumbarton zone. Dumbarton time, which is its own time zone, listeners, you might not know.
It's similar to Universal Time.
Mm.
UTC.
No one knows what it is, but it does exist. I don't want another one, though.
That is fucking disgusting.
It's like
eating hell.
Do you like them?
No.
Why do people like them? What's the appeal?
They're one of those things that you hate, but you eat because they're there.
No, a lot of people say, oh, Ferrero Rocher, lovely. In fact, no one's ever said that. But they say...
Well, like in the advert.
Well, I mean, they're apparently some kind of... superfood.
Well, to be honest, no one ever actually said that when you say you're spoiling us. That doesn't mean you buy them.
It's kind of a... it's a piss take, isn't it? It's sarcasm.
It's like, oh, ambassador, you're really spoiling
us. Who says that unless they're taking the
piss? Like, why don't you buy...
delicious. No.
Oh, ambassador, why don't you buy me something fucking nice next time, you cunt? Why don't you just...
The German man says...
Eat that, cunt.
No, cunt's fine.
Right, again, now, when you say it, that's three times.
The Italian guy, you expect, I mean, he thinks the best thing he can possibly say, but in fact it's the most sarcastic thing he can say, which is excelente. Excelente, he looks at excelente, and obviously he wouldn't say that even if you gave him a fucking quail's egg with like loads of caviar and some foie gras and a truffle on the top,
with jizz on.
He still wouldn't say excelente, because, I mean, he'd just be enjoying it too much. Because that's what those sort of people like.
I'm just continue along the advert thing. Do you remember Gino Ginelli?
Of course I remember Gino Ginelli.
Gino Ginelli.
George Lang used it as a he's got it on a soundboard.
Take Gino home with you. That's how he's saying. Brilliant.
No one remembers that bit. I think you're the only person who remembers that bit.
But anyway, that's how he's saying. Ended. Take a Gino. And if you do remember that, do tweet us, Dumbarton Days of the Twitter.
They all know we've been smoking Marlboros. Now we're smoking Marlboro Red. Earlier Marlboro Lights. So if Marlboro would like to get in touch with us and sponsor the show, then please
Philip
do.
Philip Morris, who own Marlboro.
Then please do get in touch
please
with the show.
Please do get involved with us. And please, if you do send facts, please send the gold ones, because the red ones are really heavy going.
They are very heavy.
We'll smoke them because we've got nothing left except those. But
what'd you buy them?
I've got some whiskey, actually.
What'd you buy them?
Look at that horrible whiskey.
Why did you buy the reds?
So I went to a shop in Tufnell Park and it didn't sell anything
up. Pretty sparse. Only Marlboro Reds. So obviously you've monopolised the market there, or everyone's bought all the other fags and not yours, which is all the more reason for you, Philip Redmond, or whatever
Philip
your name
Morris.
Is, Phil Redmond, for you to provide us with more of your cigarettes, because then we'll only advertise them more on this deeply popular
podcast. And as you know, as Philip Morris knows, it's illegal to advertise cigarettes. We won't advertise them, we'll just mention them.
Yeah, I'm not advertising anything. I didn't say advertise.
Well, I didn't mention
advertising.
But if you are a younger listener, smoking is very harmful.
What we'll say now is there are other cigarettes available.
The great thing about cigarettes is the crappier the cigarette, the more quality the name. Have you ever noticed that?
That's a very good point.
Mayfair, you have to be a smoker really to understand this, but if you do smoke, Mayfair are the sort of thing that would choke you.
And indeed, on the same London theme, Pall Mall.
Pall Mall. Disgusting.
Cheapest cigarette you can buy.
Now, Benson Hedges have a low-grade brand called Sovereign, which sounds pretty highfalutin. Sovereign. That actually makes you cough up blood immediately.
And if you don't mind me saying, although I've never smoked them, John Player Special, I've heard a particularly rough.
Regal.
John Player Special.
Special. Regal. If you get your lips around a Regal, you'll be in A&E by the end of the evening.
So what are we
Windsor.
saying?
Windsor. I mean, that's another place where the Queen lives. That'll make you want to be fucking sick after smoking them. Basically, you think of a posh place, name a fag after it, and then think of a man coughing up blood, being sick on himself in the street, and that's what you got.
And those adverts really will ring true, the ones on the front of the thing to advertise death.
So essentially, if you want...
And impotent.
I guess what you can get from that, what you can surmise from this whole discussion is buy Old Kent Road fags. That probably makes sense, doesn't it? If you're talking Monopoly fags,
certainly should be.
If Mayfair's the worst, Old
White
Kent
Chapel.
Road.
I mean, we could go through them.
But I think probably Old Kent Road or White. Buy the brown ones. Buy the brown set. And if you're in real trouble, buy Pentonville fags.
Yeah, the light blues.
Angel Islington fags. You know.
Or Euston Road.
Yeah, but just get involved in that side of the.
Oh, the pink ones.
The £50
side.
The pink ones.
Pound Mall.
Then you're in
trouble. Whitehall, Northumberland Avenue.
No, stick to the £50 side of the Monopoly board for fags. Once you're in the £100 house territory, you're in a lot of trouble. And after that, you know, you're killing yourself. And if you get around to the £200 house side of the board.
Well, Mayfair. I mean, 200 to
Mayfair Park Lane. There's a rank
Mayfair's
Park 400. Lane.
Oh, yeah.
£200 a house. No, I'm talking.
No, talking
price of houses.
£50, £100, £150, £200.
You must know that.
Yeah, I do know that. Of course,
yeah.
I know that.
Well, that's all.
Look,
that's
there's a picture of me playing beating my brother in Monopoly.
Well, that's
look,
what I was talking
look,
about.
That picture on the wall.
I didn't say 400.
That picture. I was talking about the title deed. The picture on the wall, of
this
course, me beating my brother at Monopoly.
You
and if you look at
them
it,
in rows, you
if you
talk
if you
about
look at it,
the size of the
if you I know what you're saying. If you look at it, my brother Josiah, he's actually got all of the properties there. Yeah, I'm sitting back, knowing I'm winning with two sets, and not even the dark blues. And I'm beating
well,
him.
No one's ever won a game of Monopoly with the dark blues. Or the purples, as we call them.
What do you mean, everyone? You only win the dark blues.
No, you don't. In the non-colour version of the game, we call them purple.
Are they purple?
Yeah, they're purple.
Are they really?
Yeah.
That's news to me.
Yeah, well, as I said, the non-colour blind version of the game, which is specialist. we don't call them
the dark blue,
the
navies.
The purple set.
Not even quite navy.
I don't know, listeners, you can tweet in, but I call them the purple set.
Do tweet in to tell me if they are indeed purple, because I've never heard them be referred to as purple.
Most people call it the purple set, and no one's ever won a game of Monopoly with the purple set. It's a poison chalice.
Maybe because I only played my brother, who's also colourblind.
You know how everyone knows how you win Monopoly, and there's one set that you need. What's
reds.
The one set that you
reds.
Need? It's not the reds.
Oranges
it's
or
the
reds.
Orange.
In oranges and reds, to be honest.
Because statistically, in Monopoly, what is the set that people land on more than anything else? It's the orange set. And there's a reason for that, and I can tell you the reason for that is because lots of people get sent to jail. What's the average number thrown with two dice?
Seven.
Where does that get you? Marlborough Street, the
doesn't,
orange set.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Doesn't that get you to Queen's Chest?
No, it hits you on the orange ones.
And here's the reason why.
That's why.
Here's the reason
you
I say
win Monopoly by getting the orange set and holding on to the orange set.
Here's why I say red.
It's also very cheap
because,
to develop,
because,
but only £100 a house.
Because if you have all the reds and you wait for the chances to come around, you've got Trafalgar Square, which is easier to procure than Mayfair, and also easier to
develop. No, don't get me wrong.
I'm a red man. I'm an orange man. Don't get me wrong. I'm an orange man. Orange has done me well in the past, but reds, I do like
red and yellow are your second suit. That's where you go once you've got orange.
I tell you what, people never land on. That's greens. Don't be fooled by the greens.
You can win the game of green. It has been.
Don't be fooled by the greens.
Extremely expensive to develop, but very lucrative. If you can get yourself in the position where you can get hold of it.
Greens are very much.
Green are what you take when you're in a when you've got down to a two man game.
Okay, but listen. Greens are an end game. End game pack.
Yes, they're very much an end game set, but you will not win a game of green if you get them at the start. No way. And I tell you what, a lot of people write off the light blues. That's a place, if you're in a 4-6 man game, this is my advice to you listeners, if you're in a 4-6 man game, if you can't get the oranges at the beginning, get the light blues, because you will start reaping a lovely little harvest as they come through.
Got to be honest, never get the pinks though. The pinks will do nothing for you.
Pinks not landed on much.
Exactly. No one's ever won with the pink hand.
There's a guy, this is I read lots about Monopoly. I used to play a lot with my brother, and I read loads of books about Monopoly. There's science behind Monopoly because of the way the dice is round, essentially.
I mean, it's luck. It's a game of luck.
Yes, but you make your own luck in the sense that the dice. No, but dice.
Be lucky.
No, but dice are thrown in a certain way, and the patterns of dice. There've been lots of studies into it, in what the average number you get is seven. Is the average number from two dice. And the way that the game works means
that
you land on certain squares more than others because of the way that it sends you around the board.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain sets that are better than others, and the orange are the best because of the way that you get sent to jail a lot.
My brother's always been a fan of the stations.
Stations are a great way to make money at the very beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get them at the beginning.
They're good development. That's a good development.
They're good development
set because you can
got decent money.
Use the money you get from the stations to develop.
Yeah.
They're
great at the beginning of the game, but a man who trades on the stations for the whole game will lose. And he'll pay the price for sitting in
And indeed, if you look at the small picture on my wall, which you are welcome to come around and look at, listeners, if you pay...
It really is very small.
Pay a toll.
It's about, it's 2 by 1 inch, I'd say.
It's a quarter of the 6 by 4, which is 3 by 2.
It's a 3 by 2 inch photo. It's so small that there's absolutely no way you could tell what was going on the board.
I do have a bigger picture of it. But I went to the Kodak...
Come around and look at it.
I went to one of the Kodak machines, and I only wanted a small picture. I can't remember what of, but I had a few pictures on my camera. And I thought, well, okay, let's get the best pictures off. And that was one of them, and I think that's the only one I actually kept for myself. I think those two others I just discarded, but that one I'm very happy to have.
Monopoly is, of course, the game of kings, and a lot of people play it with gay abandon, I would go as far as to say.
Mm-hmm.
People do things like put money in the middle when you hit free parking, which of course is not in the rules.
I do like that rule.
It's not in the rules of the game, and obviously extends it far beyond. And then they say Monopoly takes forever to finish. And you say, well, of course it does. If you overinflate the amount of money that's in the game, the money comes out of the game very quickly.
The thing with the free parking stuff in the middle square. When most people play that rule,
games of Monopoly can be finished within minutes if they're played
properly. When most people play that
did a shot.
No, it doesn't do a shot. It's not an optic. It's just a one of those cocktail boring things.
I feel like I'm Tom Cruise in the film Cocktail. You can't see what's happening later.
Of course, when you I learned from a cocktail waiter, if you actually do throw those up and throw them in a circle, it just comes out. The stuff they do in Cocktail is not actually
possible
without spilling stuff. They block them up for that film. Interesting fact, I think. What are we talking about? Monopoly. Oh, the free parking. What I do as a house rule, if people are happy with it, most people just put all of the money that goes to the bank, they put in the middle. What you should do, if you're going to play a fun for, don't eat anymore, they're terrible. If you're going to really play the free parking rules, then just put this stuff that comes from taxes, i.e. the income taxes, the super taxes, and the ones you get from chance cars.
Call me old-fashioned. Call me old-fashioned, but the reason that Monopoly has rules is because they make it a good game. If you start...
Very well-designed
board
game.
If you start entering into it with your own ideas about I'm going to change it and make it my own game, then, to be honest with you, deserve it to go on for 10 hours.
I like it to go on for 10 hours.
Well, I don't. I like to win it. And then have another game. And say, well, let's play again.
Good game.
Good game Monopoly shouldn't last more than
2 hours. But have you ever landed on free parking and got £1,000?
Yes, when I'm playing with morons. And I've said, this is ridiculous. And most times I've walked out before the end. I've said, this is ridiculous. It's never going to end.
But that's because they're putting all of the money that goes to the bank on it.
It shouldn't be played. It's not in the rules. Just play by the fucking rules. The rules are there for a reason. The man who invented Monopoly does not want you to fuck around. He wants you to bankrupt people. It's the whole point. It's about capitalism.
I've got to tell you, I've had a lot of arguments with people about rules. Rules of
national
games.
National lottery.
But this is one rule that's actually good. Most people, for instance, I've played Scrabble with a guy.
Why add rules to a game?
I'm going to show you an extreme. I played Scrabble with some people once. And they started swapping letters between themselves. And not only swapping letters between themselves, like saying, do you need an E, do you need an E? No, they just like sort of threw their tiles on the floor and just started making words out of them.
To me, that's the same
which
as
point
the parking
why not just no, it's not the same. Because why not just get some paper and write words on some paper? Because you might as well.
With Monopoly,
it's not about throwing.
Why bother playing the game?
It's just another element. It's just another element.
As you said earlier, it's a game of chance to a certain extent because of the dice. Yes, it is. Why add an extra element of chance to it and take even less skill in the game? Because you're taking skill out of the game by putting chance into it.
Because most of
you're
Monopoly,
adding
most,
more chance
because most
to the
of
game
Monopoly
that has
is
a
about,
lot of skill.
Most of Monopoly is about Jeopardy, but the free parking
most
space
of Monopoly
in this
is about skill.
And moving around the board is about Jeopardy. It's about landing on space you don't want to land on.
No, it's about that is the element.
But
of
the
chance.
Free parking one,
adding more chance to a game of skill.
And also you'll hate this as well. Land on go get £400. Yes.
Yes. Well, that's ridiculous.
It's an excellent thing,
but it's not in the rules.
I don't think you should be in the rules. I think it's.
But why? You might as well just play. Just call it something else. Call it wankopoly.
Because you've got two spaces where good things happen.
A travestiopoly. It's not the same game. It's just bullshit. It's just idiots sitting around wanking and playing a shit game.
Okay, I'm going to caveat what is a very good game.
I
want to end this argument. I will caveat this with when I do make these when people do make these rules. I think it's the most important thing about these rules is that everyone has to agree. If one person doesn't agree, then I'll forget
well,
them.
If you're in
and
room,
so if I was playing,
with,
I was, so,
agrees,
so, so if I was playing, so
idiots.
If I was playing, if I was, well, fine, I'm an idiot then. But if I was playing with you, Tim, I'd be more than happy playing with the Monopoly.
I don't want to play your game. I want to play Monopoly.
No. I'm saying if I was playing with you, I would be more than happy to play by strict rules.
Well, of course you would.
But if everyone else is happy to play by free parking and get £400 and go,
yeah,
then I'm happy
know,
to play.
If you know if people are prepared to play that, then they're weak. They're idiots because they don't really know what Monopoly is about. Monopoly is about killing off the competitors as quick as possible. It's the whole point of the game. It's
okay, well, I've had very good games of Monopoly where we play those rules. In fact, that game there, I played free parking and
go. Our game is about raw capitalism.
And that
it's
was the best game of Monopoly I've ever
not
played
about
in my life.
Having any more chance in the game than is absolutely necessary. You win Monopoly by being very good at dealing, wheeling and dealing. You don't win Monopoly by raw chance.
That's the massive part of it, and I'll keep going back to this.
But the more chances you give to people to accidentally win money, the more chance you give people to win it by not being good at Monopoly, but actually just by throwing the right dice, which is not fun.
Well, okay.
Because I don't want to put that. Might as well just flick a coin.
Okay,
whatever
you think, I'm telling you that if you play house rules, but if you also play strict house rules, then you can still have an equally good game. And in fact, parts of that game, we did deals that went on for half an hour with us passing piece of, you know, talking and then doing I'd write down the piece of paper what I thought, slide it across the table, what I thought I wanted to pay for whatever properties.
I don't doubt that the deals were any less impressive or important. All I'm saying is that they're watered down.
I know.
By the fact that deal can be completely undone by a complete act of chance on the next throw.
What I'm telling you is that everyone was very happy playing that game. Well, especially
that's
me,
fine.
For one, I suppose. But there was no problem.
I'm not saying that people can't be happy playing a game, but people can be happy pissing each other's faces on the internet. It doesn't mean it's right.
There was no problem. No one had a problem with the rules.
Well, that's because, as I say, these are people who don't respect
the game
of Monopoly.
I was included,
and well,
I do respect
you
the
don't respect the game of Monopoly because you don't play by the rules. That's not respecting the game of Monopoly. That's inventing a game based on Monopoly. And I don't think that you have the right to do Monopoly. And
the man who invented Monopoly, yes.
Whoever he was on Atlantic City, and that man,
you're right, would be turning
in his grave. If he knew that people were watering it down and taking and putting chance into a game that is essentially going to score.
Look, you're right. The thing is, we had a lot of fun.
Well, that's fine. You can have a lot of fun. All I'm saying is, I wouldn't have fun because in the back of my mind, I'd be thinking there's too much chance.
And I wouldn't be happy with playing a game with anyone who thought those rules weren't fun. And in fact, we should. We got Monopoly. I think we got Monopoly here.
Yeah, I've got Monopoly somewhere.
Well, we should play Monopoly sometime. Let's do it next week with Chris Stevens. No, maybe Chris Stevens will like it. No, I think we'll get distracted easily. But let's play a game of Monopoly next week.
Maybe live on air.
Wow, it'll be like a 2 or 3 hour
we
podcast.
We might have actually done that on the radio show once at university.
2 or 3 hour podcast.
I think we played Monopoly. We used to have a 3 hour show. I think we did once have a game. Either Monopoly or something like that. It might be Ludo. Whatever it was.
I think we can all agree Ludo. Ludo has no skill.
I think we tried to play Monopoly on air because I think Alan Partridge mentions it once that he tried to play it on air in one of these radio shows. And I think we tried to do it. And I think it didn't work out, but we did try it for a while. And then,
well, Ludo has some skill because you've got 4 pieces.
But I think
we used to
play songs and then come back and try and explain what was happening. But I think a lot of people used to phone in and say, look, this isn't working. Can you stop doing this? And I think eventually we did abandon
our game.
We ceded to the public opinion, which was, this isn't working. As it's not a radio thing. Because you can't really, it's not even like chess where you can explain where the pieces are, it gets so complicated. Because every time you've got to explain that so and so's got this much money, this many pieces, this many houses, and he's just mortgaged the old Kent Road. And essentially, if you're listening on the radio, you've got to be sitting there with a notebook writing down what everyone's position is, and it's too much for most people.
I mean, even recaps probably would be far too long.
Yeah, the recaps would take, you know, like 10 minutes,
yeah.
And then you'd play a song, and then of course when
you
came back from the song, everything's changed again.
What, Bob's got 2 greens. He's looking for the last one. That's still in the pack.
Yeah, it's that sort of. And then
he'll be looking for that, and then the next song he's
a couple of songs.
He's got the green. He's got
like,
Oxford Street now.
And he's mortgaged Oxford
he's
Street.
He's going to be wanting to develop that, but he has had to mortgage.
There's
it.
There's been an ongoing
mortgage
deal
Bow
between
Street
Jeff and
to
Jim over Chicago Square. It's come to nothing. you know, they have been talks have broken down. You've just been listening to Don McLean's American Pie, and during that there was an extremely heated negotiation over Trafalgar Square, which sadly did break down during the fourth verse.
Tim's in jail. Of course he can still deal from there. But he's failed to secure Whitechapel,
and he's now going for his second throw to get out of jail. And no, it's not a double.
Here's Manson,
Nancy boy, and we'll see you after that. And then you come back again, and everything.
And you hear the dice roll.
You're in the dice roll, and then you fade up even during a song trying to explain. It just becomes a nightmare. and it's impossible.
Well,
you can imagine how hard that could be to do. I mean,
but I tell you what, it's good to try
sometimes.
These things. Ludo would possibly be better, but I mean, actually, no, it wouldn't be better. It'd just be like who's won, who's lost.
Yeah.
Tim's got a blue tile home. What are they called? The pieces that you move around.
Counter.
Tim's got 2 blue cabs at home. He'll be looking to secure his third in the next roll.
You remember when chess was on the telly? You remember when Kasparov
went
short?
What? I remember it being talked about. I don't remember. I didn't actually ever see it.
It was sort of, what was it, early 90s?
Kasparov short
was quite the
talk of the early 90s.
Well, interestingly, I mean, the Channel 4 covered the whole thing live, and it was actually quite well watched, and people were getting quite into it. I remember as a boy, I was quite into it. I didn't really understand chess, but there was something cathartic about watching 2 grown men sit and look at a chessboard for hours.
I was almost in
hours.
The chess club, but I was away or ill the one day when they chose the team. Which was very upsetting. I never really tried to get it because I thought, oh, that's that. I thought, that's that. I'll not go to Skegness and play in.
Yeah.
That's where they went. Went off to Skegness
to
play all the.
For the short Kasparov thing, to
I can't drink all this whiskey tonight, Tim. There's like a litre of it there.
I believe for the Kasparov short thing, to make it more exciting for TV, they removed the half hour barrier.
Sex
it
Pistols.
Was half hour a move, and they took it down to 15 minutes a move to make it sort of quick fire for TV, you know, make it a bit more like football.
I'm sure Kasparov and Short wouldn't have minded that.
No, they didn't. I mean, they're pure massive professional. I mean, they were like, well, whatever, we can do it, it's quick fire. But still,
everyone's in the same boat.
I mean, I remember watching it on Channel 4 as a boy, and you know, it's a man looking at a chessboard for 15 minutes in absolute silence. I mean, imagine the spectacle on TV. I mean,
the
some
commentary.
Of you, some of the
was
people,
the commentary?
No, no, Nate. Well, there's nothing to say.
There is something to say. I mean, okay, if you...
I think there was occasional...
If you
comment.
Read the papers...
there was occasional...
Have you ever looked... I mean, sometimes I really like to read the games pages in papers.
Oh, they're very
where they've got, you know, 100 words devoted to a move, like, you know, king to... D4 would be expedient.
I love it
if they were to cover rook to knight two.
I love it when they have like the best of like chess moves and they're like classic moves from the past and they show them to you.
Yeah, that sort of
and
thing.
They explain.
And then the bridge ones, of course, which is the great thing about bridge is no one really understands it unless you're a bridge player, which there are very few bridge players.
Anyway, back to this this thing. They go down to 15 minutes, but still.
But the bridge has got such a great what's the word terminology a lexicon I think that it just makes absolute nonsense. Like ace could play duvet, but the duvet would. Being in danger of glassing itself in the forehead, and having deep tissue scars.
But still, with this competition, just back to it, it was 15 minutes of watching a man look at a chessboard, and I do remember watching it on Channel 4. He covered the whole thing live. They did about 10 matches, I think, for the Masters thing, the Grand Masters.
Mm.
And each one lasted about 5 days, and they just showed the whole thing. And it's a man looking at a chessboard for 15 minutes, and then then they're like, he puts his hand, and like a, you can hear everyone, because it's like a live audience.
Hopefully touch moves in play.
There's a bit of a...
touch move in play?
Well, in the sense, well, once you touch it...
I mean,
that's without saying.
Cardinal rule.
And then he picks it up and moves it, and then there's like a big... from the crowd, and then he... hits the buzzer thing and it goes
bang short,
and then 15 minutes
of short.
But you think, you know, like that was
a Kasparov won, I thought, didn't he?
Yeah, he kicked his ass. Yeah.
Now, did they televise the Deep Blue match?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
the
one I'd have wanted to see. If you don't know, listeners, Deep Blue was the latest I know, 15 years ago, the most advanced chess computer ever made, and Kasparov played it and beat it.
He got beaten, didn't he, by the Deep Blue 2 beat him in one
Deep
game.
Blue
2. No, there were two more after that where he played computers. He played Deeper Blue, I think it was called.
That's a better name than Deep Blue 2, I'm glad they called it that.
And it beat him, but he argued that IBM cheated. It's actually a really fascinating story.
And a human intervened?
He was saying because he insisted he wanted to see the logs of Deeper Blue's computer, because IBM said that they were that they had programmers who were doing some sort of updates on the system every time he did a move, but they said they weren't telling the computer what to do, but they had to update its like.
It sounds
a team of programmers working on Deeper Blue, and he was playing on his own, and he basically insisted because he beat it like 3 times. And it beat him 3 times. It came down to a final match, and it beat him in the last match. But he reckons that they cheated in the last match, in the sense that he said that he claimed that they had 3 or 4 top grandmasters working with the programmers, reprogramming the computer whilst he was playing. So he said essentially the computer didn't beat him; it was the minds of 4
grandmasters working with the programmers.
That was his claim.
Surely to goodness not.
And then he demanded a rematch.
Although IBM a lot of money.
They built another computer.
They could afford the Grandmasters.
I forget what the third one
was called. How much did the Grandmaster of Chess earn? Not a lot, surely.
Not much. I imagine you could probably buy them in pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And then they got a final...
thanks.
Yeah. And then they got... And there's a third one. You can read about all this on Wikipedia, ladies and gentlemen. It's a really fascinating story. There was a third computer... After Deeper Blue, and I forget what it's called. It's nothing. It's called something else. It's not anything blue. Again, made by IBM. And it beat him again and again. He claimed it cheated, and he demanded to see their records. And oddly, and you know, you can say I'm a conspiracy theorist, whatever that may be, but they would not. So we're having a bit of a technical issue here, but we're all right now.
That's the Nokia phone. I'm sure.
Oh, it's already lit. I don't know what I'm lighting again.
No, but Have to take it. A lot of people would not show him
the logs from the computer, and they never showed anyone in the public domain the logs from the computer, which essentially validated, there's a philosophical thing that says by right
that he wins the argument. Logic would suggest if they're not going to show him, then obviously he's right.
We're not going to show the weapons of the system, because if we show it to everyone, then they'll know how we did it. And like, this is the most complex computer that's ever been programmed, and it's wrong. But interestingly, my friend at university, Jeff, who I live with in the third year,
don't tell me he had access to the IBM computers.
No, but he's now a spy for GCHQ. He's one of the great. He's like one of. He was one of the best.
You're allowed to say that.
Probably not. I didn't
say what was GCHQ?
It's like our spying headquarters in Cheltenham. That's where all our spies are trained. But I'm not said his surname, so I've not really given much away. I'm sure there's more than one spy called Jeff. He may not even go by his real name. He's called 007.
What did he say?
He was a great computer programmer, one of the best computer programmers in the world, in fact. And that's how he got this job. He said that he reckons that he could have programmed a computer that could beat Kasparov. And he's not a man who's full of bravado.
Oh, he reckons he could have programmed a computer.
No, but he said that actually the algorithms involved in programming a computer to beat a grandmaster are possible. Like, he didn't say he could do it, but he said that he made this program that could win Go.
A lot of people say a lot of things to him.
No, but he said that he didn't
think... He might like this man, but
It wasn't because that. I'm not saying... I'm still very suspicious of IBM, but he said he thinks that the way that they could run algorithms based on every previous game of chess that's ever happened and predicting the way that he would move, he thought it would be possible to beat anyone with the technology that's now available. And he said that the reason they wouldn't have released the files was sort of justified, in the sense that they would have to release, basically, if they gave someone the files, they would basically give away their entire computer system on, like, the cleverest algorithms they've ever written. But he said he thought that it was possible to do it. So, I mean, I'm just saying, I'm just throwing it into the mix. I'm saying it's inconclusive. I'm thrown into the mix that someone who I very much respect as a computer expert did say that he thought that it would be possible, and he thought that Kasparov was just basically angry that he lost. But he said, yeah, the reason that IBM didn't give him out would be for a very good reason, because they would have to release very sensitive data on very, very technical stuff, which they wouldn't want in the public domain, because as soon as they let that out, then everyone else, every other computer program in the world would know how they did it.
Now, the sound you heard a minute ago was the sound of my Nokia phone falling on the ground and the metal back falling off. I can't remember the exact name of the model. I think it's got an I on it. But I've heard this problem through a lot of people. If you ever bought a Nokia phone, it's got a silver back, black screen area and silver buttons. Whenever you drop this phone, the back falls off. Now, just as like a slight aside, I suppose, I'd like anyone who's had that same problem to tweet if they've had that. No one's tweeted yet. If you've been considering tweeting, we do welcome it, obviously. And although I do think Twitter's is shit, really, because you don't really get to talk to people. I said no to a Christian earlier about Stephen Gately, in fact.
You can always email us at dumbartondays@hotmail.com.
Can you?
I think I've got that. You'll never check it. No. You can email thedumbartons@hotmail.com.
Can you? Oh, you can.
I've never checked that either.
Yeah, I did today.
Well, so you can email that.
Been hoping for an email from Spotify, but they've not come through.
You can also go to myspace.com/thedumbartons. You could send a message via either just chuck it up on the message board or send a message directly, or you could go to facebook.com and go to the Dumbarton Diary on there. You could join that group and leave a message. You could go to the Dumbartons group and leave a message. There's plenty of places you can leave messages if you want to. I know that Bart's quite studious when it comes to checking these things, so you know we will get it.
Well, once every few weeks.
If you do, I will get it. If you do want to say something, I mean, there's plenty of ways to say it, and if you do know us, which I think most people listening to this do, you can send us a text message to either of our phones.
The Stephen Gately thing, very sad that he's left us now. But one man, there's a thing on Twitter that lets you that shows you the top things that are being tweeted about, the top phrases. One of them is RIP Stephen Gately. At the time, I was tweeting about Stephen Gately, and I clicked on that. You're here, Bowie. Okay. Well, not to worry. Tim, very, very weak bladder, it turns out. Normally, I talk about X-Men at this time, but I'm going to talk about Stephen Gately. Loved me for a reason. Me and my friend Edward Haynes, I was just recently got in touch with me again. We loved that song back in Christmas of 1994. Amazing, amazing tune. Yes, it's a cover, but what a cover. I think a lot of you will agree. Anyway, Stephen Gately. Someone had written on the RIP Stephen Gately things, someone had written it, had said, RIP Stephen Gately, can a man ever live once he's died? Can a man ever live again? And I simply wrote, I've never done this at thing, but you click on the reply thing and you're like, at, what's it, whatever his name was, at them. And I just wrote no. And now a lot of my life is devoted to just sort of rocking people up to say, to sort of, you know, getting reaction out of them. Hopefully I'm going to have reaction out of that man.
There's no using the phrase rocking up.
I like the phrase rocking up. It's
coming to common usage.
I don't really know what it. I mean, did it have a history? I know. Yeah, I know. I've got it from.
I got it from her. I gave it to you through her.
It makes it like hyping.
Possibly
hyping is too much. Rocking is much more sort of a dirty phrase for hyping things up.
Get my sister involved in a conference call and ask her where.
Only. Well, I mean,
the history of that phrase.
I think that's as likely as getting Dan Paris involved.
Well, actually, I'm going to get back onto Dan Paris because I believe he's probably no longer on his expedition, and you know he will.
He's going to go on another one now.
As
promised, it's been a year.
No, I think we'll get him back. No, it's not. It's been about 6 months. He'll be back in Perth or wherever he lives, and we're going to get him on. But I think we're going to have to wind things up because I'm quite tired.
I'd agree. And thanks very much for listening. We've had a lovely time. We found booze.
I hope you've enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed talking.
If you have enjoyed it, again, no, I'm not going to bother saying it. But thanks for listening. We've been at Dumbarton Days. You can follow us wherever you like. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Always the Dumbarton Days. Good night.